the races with Steve Bick.
Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
From Ocala, we're staying here for two more days. A very good Thursday, race fans. Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964, if you're listening to Sirius XM online. And at our website, stevebick.com, much more sedate this morning at OBS as the dust settles on the first two-year-old in training sale of the season. And yesterday, the subdued atmosphere actually was present. You could tell there had been a lot. I think a lot of people that had wrapped up their purchase interests on Monday and Tuesday, and plus as Tom Ventura hinted too, a number of people that were heading not just out of town but also heading out of the country. And, of course, heading to the Emirates for the World Cup as well. But here, there was still plenty of action, including, as Tommy was kind of hoping and hinting, able to ring up one more seven-figure seller yesterday, and a filly, no less, a Munnings filly. And Munnings actually finished with a flourish yesterday, and Tom McCracklin, who... We actually may talk to Tom today, this morning at some point. The one group that you can never get really at the sales are the active consigners who are just busy at the barns. And so with the two-year-olds being distributed, lots of vans, of course, pulling up and carrying the two-year-olds to their new homes, whether it's at racetracks right away or whether it's at training centers or you know, even to farms for a little decompression. That's actually something we could talk about. I know we're going to talk to Dean Dorenzo, Hartley Dorenzo, and one of the teams, one of the consigner operations that really changed the landscape going back a number of years. The idea of pin hooks that were from strength to strength, let's say, in terms of the dollar value, you know, not afraid to, you know, pay a lot for a yearling. You know, the concept had always been, you know, find a bargain and prepare it for sale and make a home run. Really, Hartley Dorenzo kind of changed a lot of that conceptually in terms of spending, you know, six figures and even upwards, high-end six figures. And then, you know, scoring whatever level. You know, buying a horse, let's say, for, you know, $250,000 and selling them for $600,000, $700,000. Buying them for $500,000 and selling them for $1 million. It's kind of a high wire act, to say the least. And there was plenty of that on display here. We'll do some recapping this first hour, and you know, catch up on some of the stories that you don't immediately latch on to. But yesterday, to round things out, as mentioned, that $1 million Munnings filly, hip 558. McCracklin, who had a terrific sale. This was a filly bred by Springhouse Farm. And Donato Lanny, who we actually, Sid and I sat down and had lunch, spent a couple of minutes with Donato Lanny, with Kerry Coffin, four-star. And I met Ed Price, who I'd never met, veteran New Englander, New England horseman, bloodstock purveyor. Got to meet him for the first time, which was fun. We got a lot of mutual friends. But Lanny signed the ticket for Frank Fletcher and the Fletcher operation. That's $1 million. Little, not that Frank Fletcher hasn't spent money, because he has. But That's a big spend, no doubt. And the Munnings became the fifth, right? The fifth. There was one $1 million hip on Monday, then four Tuesday, and or three Tuesday, and the one on Wednesday, and that's the most that this sale has produced. And the aftermath, for those of you that have been listening to the replay and got tremendous, a lot of feedback, as always, whenever John Sikora gives forth, as it were, and you get a chance to hear his insights, it always produces reaction. And I got already, and I'm sure there'll be more today, a lot of people listen get to the portion of the show the next day and then pick up the show live like now. And most uniquely, feedback from rank and file horsemen who appreciated John's candor. He stands alone in a lot of ways in the game. He's got as you could tell. I can pull out all the cliches. Marches to his own drummer. Goes his own way. Has his own approach. And I really appreciate the time he took. I mean, it's highly unusual for John to, he was very comfortable, and for him to spend 90 minutes, greatly appreciated. Elsewhere yesterday, as part of the numbers, and I suppose we should glance, I think we're going to see a visit from Tom Ventura later this hour, as well as Wojo, and we'll get big bow put on everything. But for those that like to keep keep score of things like this, the 3 days, 460 horses fetching $71,110,000 in the sessions. And it's tough to, the comparisons are, sometimes the comparisons are tough. Last year, just the two sessions, 374 sold for a little under $50 million. The average price, $154,000 here, 154,588 versus last year, $132,000. And median was the same, actually. And, we talked with Tom Ventura yesterday about the buyback, and it ended up, as Tom suggested, that a lot of the post-sale results would whittle down those what seemed like a high RNA rate. And the final number, and even this number will change over the next probably 36 hours, because there's still some horse trading going on back there, back at the barns. There's still some people buying horses that got turned away, maybe, some of the business doesn't have to be conducted. That actually would be a good question. Not every post-sale sale has to go through OBS, but very often the individuals are involved. They're more comfortable passing it through OBS. So at the highest, the buyback was 21.4%. Last year it was 12.2. There happened to have been, I think, some of that was reflected in horses that are going to be campaigned by their connections, or they might turn up in another sale. That happens, of course, as well. So sometimes the horse, a lot of times you can pull the horse if you don't like the traffic that the horse is getting, or if the horse didn't breeze as well as you think they're capable of. There's a lot of reasons. That'll be a great question. We'll have Dean Dorenzo in just a couple of minutes, and he can talk about that kind of decision making and how the sale calendar has morphed and changed. A couple of other hips to mention. The top colt yesterday ends up being a practical joke. $925,000. This one, Farm Dally Racing Stable bred, and Kieran Dunn, Waiver Tree consigned. Speedway Stables takes that one home. Look for that one in the red and white jacket. There was a pretty good success here, too, in terms of Pinhook performance. A $220,000 weanling. Top dollar weanling. And, of course, that was way before Practical Joke. There was anything to judge Practical Joke on. And ends up being a very nice success here down the road. A year and a half later, $925,000. Justify, who had a terrific sale, $700,000. And this was a nice, Niall Brennan, bred by AR Enterprises, $700,000 Justify. This was fairly late in the action yesterday that saw CSLR Racing Partners bring home this Justify, and again was available as RNA'd at Keeneland in January last year as a short yearling, $145,000 RNA, and ends up fetching $700,000. I mentioned this Munnings had a big day. Munnings, every sale is these days for Munnings is big. $685,000, and Larry Best, a colt. Larry Best serious about his fillies, but this a colt and Rose Hill Farm and John Trembovalik, the breeders, Eddie Woods consigned here. So Constitution had a $675,000 pop yesterday. Lauren Carlisle signed sequel. Consigned and bred by Seclusive Farm and SF, a $200,000 yearling turns into a $675,000 purchase. And Constitution had a very notable sale. I've got so many interesting stats that I always enjoy digging and particularly recapping some of the stallion performance and who the buyers were, particularly what buyers are on, whether it's consigners pinhookers in the fall, what stallions caught their attention, what are horses that they expect to mature well into sellable and commercial 2-year-olds, or not just commercial, but horses that are going to perform on the racetrack. And to give you an idea, the Constitution day, or 3 days, I know I have it here. I should have put it in alphabetical order. Constitution. Every Constitution that made it to the ring sold. There were no RNAs. There were four that were withdrawn, but everything else, and that was a total of eight. Every Constitution sold. And he's a $110,000 stud fee, but had sellers for $385, $675. That was the one yesterday. $625, $235, $170, $160, $150. That was Constitution's sale. Pretty notable. There's always a couple of odd, sort of surprises that you come across. And I came across one that deserves mention. Claiborne, of course, stands blame for a very reasonable $25,000. It certainly seems more than reasonable in light of the sale that he had. There were five available, five blames in this sale. Five. a Florida bred, a New York bred, an Irish bred, and two Kentucky breds. They fetched $300,000, $170,000, $450,000, $120,000, and $150,000. How about that? One of those under the radar performances. Blame for Claiborne. We started the coverage on Monday with Ned Toffee and Spendthrift. Certainly, you know, is always going to be prominent given the gigantic big box store version of a stud farm. And, you know, two of their first crop sires performed well, and both of them actually, you know, relatively inexpensive. $15,000 Mattoli, $15,000 Vino Rosso, and both had very good sales. Mattoli, after day one, there were just a couple to consider, but there were a handful, four R&A'd of the Mattolis, but 130, 95, 225, 275, 230, 275, 350, 90, 50, 50, 300, 260, 175, 325. Very nice performance for the Mattolis, well received. First opportunity to buy them as two-year-olds. And similarly, Vino Rosso. I mean, obviously two different kinds of stallions on the racetrack, but very strong effort from the Vino Rossos. 180, 60, 100, 340, 3 and a quarter, 60, 30, 550 to the LeBlancs, the one that Brandon and Allie Rice offered yesterday. 185, 150, 150, and 37. There were just there were three that R&A'd at various, 125. 15 and 27. But Vino Rosso gets off to a nice start. Who else is impressed? Yeah, Practical Joke, I was curious because, you know, seeing how he was going to trade off the big weekend a couple of weeks ago. I'll tell you who was interesting. And you know, Darby Dan continues to refashion their operation in terms of their offerings, their stallion offerings. Tapiture, you know, who's, what was it, probably, I don't know, fifth crop? $7,500 cover. And listen to this. This is the results of the Tapitures that obviously people like. 25,000, 42,000, 55, 170, 75, 35, 200, 80, 25, and 30,000. You know, it's kind of just indicative. There was only one R&A, and that was a $95,000 reserve. So I thought Tapiture was worth noting. Yeah, Twirling Candy, everybody expects. I'll give you another stallion that is now, in the mainstream, in the flow of his career, that might surprise you. Upstart. How about this sale? Six offered, six sold. One actually was an out. 75,000, 250, 250, 190, 45, and 130. He stands for 30,000 at Airdrie. So a lot of interesting results. We talked to John yesterday. He brought up World of Trouble, and World of Trouble had a great sale. $150,000 seller to Mike McCarty. That'll end up with Asmussen. Our friend Christian Vellante, who apparently has got a two-year-old already that he likes a lot and that they think is a runner, he paid $50,000 for one as well. $45,000 for Scott Lake bought one, a 17, a 20, here's another 50. So World of Trouble, who stands for a nickel. Some good results. And then, I don't know if I saved the best for last, but or most interesting for last, enticed. Enticed. No buzz really coming in. And listen to this result sheet. He stands for $5,000 at Darley. A $200,000 seller to Mike Ryan. The Greens. Len Green and John, $120,000 enticed, bred by, consigned by Ocala Stud. They may have probably bred. Then a couple of 50,000s, Peter Miller and KDE Equine. There was one RNA, make that two. There were two RNAs, but then a 70, Dennis O'Neill. How about another 200,000 seller yesterday to Mike Ryan, enticed. $5,000 and all kinds of gigantic multiples. So those were the ones that caught my eye. I do that every, you know, I like doing that. just curious, you know, curiosity. I got other news and notes in here from the sale, and we'll start shortly with Dean Dorenzo, all right? And a couple of other things before I reach out, a couple of things that piled up. Mike Acton, congratulations to Mike Acton, who's going to take over the racing secretary position at Sam Houston, coming over from Remington/Lone Star. So Acton caught it over the last, I don't know, 2 weeks. Frank Hopf, of course, leaving Sam Houston to go to Colonial. So some musical chairs. We'll talk to Frank as soon as he gets settled, I'm sure. I mentioned in passing yesterday about the equine injury database. At some point, we got to get to Dr. Parkin, who, you know, does this analysis. We haven't talked to him in a couple of years, but the numbers are just very encouraging, and it, you know, it's a comprehensive effort, and the database, which, you know, Dr. Scalay conceived and, you know, was the driving force behind the establishment. You know, this had never been done in the industry, and it goes back to 2009. So we're coming up on 15 years of tracking these numbers, and they just keep coming down just on a steady basis. It's one of the real successes. I mean, you don't know how you're doing if you don't have a measurement tool. And so the EIDB, Equine Injury Database, you know, adding to the conscious effort by everybody to, you know, be on high alert and at every juncture in horses training and racing. I've got some other HISA stuff that I can sort of accumulate. There's no huge rush. I should mention, I suppose, though, that Kentucky, KHRC, they officially did the opt-in exercise. I do have a crop, the crop, not the crop report, not the orange, not FCOJ, not frozen concentrate OJ or pork bellies, but the crop rule violations. I'll save that for Tony. It's quite something when you see in print that a guy is fined a day of racing and a day of mounts and $250 because they hit the horse seven times with the crop that is essentially, you know, your brother or sister hit you harder with with wiffle ball bats than horses are being hit with this safety stick. It's amazing. Seven strikes is going to cost you a day of mounts. And that includes people like Jason Weiss in New York. He got hit with one. Ron Allen, Tampa, got hit with one. Kyle Fry and Carlos Barboza at Santa Anita. Cisco Arrieta and Christian Torres, who are, you know, the leading jocks at Oakland. They both are going to lose a day of mounts. So anyway, I just crazy. And then not to mention, you know, those of us who were betting and those of us that own and the trainers that have to watch as, you know, maybe one extra or two extra pop might make a difference in a horse winning, you know, or even being second. It's, again, you know, answering to people who have no interest in the game. In fact, they have the exact opposite. They would love to destroy the game. So I makes you shake your head. Later this morning, let's get a couple of lineup notes in. Bill Gallo, we're gonna jump a fence. Gallo's gonna visit with the start of the official start of the jump season this weekend. I had to get the Bill. Jeff Franklin, we're going to pick up the ball and run with the Thoroughgraph conversations. And Jeff Franklin, who many of you know from the various capacities he's enjoyed in the game, and of course has been associated with Jerry Brown and Thoroughgraph now for a good long time. But, you know, work at NYRA and TVG, and you've heard Jeff with us any number of times. I want to get to Rich Eng today as well. Of course, the NCAA tourney continues today, and I got to give you our leader in our group, right? I'll save that for Rich. I'll have to go dig it up, actually. Back at it today, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Should be great. I've got to get two visits in that we've been putting off. Michael Blowen, nice news, a couple of things going on at Old Friends. So we'll get Michael in here in the next probably hour, give or take. Paul Umbrello from Massachusetts. You've heard this Massachusetts bred ad running, and the fascinating situation that there's this money accrual, and very much like the situation 6-7 years ago we used to talk about with Frank Petromalo and Debbie Easter in Virginia, right? And Virginia was trying to keep the beach ball going at a fish concert, keeping it in the air. Well, that's what they're doing in Massachusetts until such time, hopefully, as they can craft some sort of a new equine sport facility, because that's the way the discussion has been. There's been a couple of attempts or suggestions and concepts that have been floated. Nothing has taken root. Sturbridge, there was talk of a facility at Sturbridge that seems to have been turned away by the local residents, which seems a little strange. I don't know why you wouldn't want an equine sport, because we're not talking just a racetrack. We're talking about a facility that could include horse shows and any number of other equine sport activities, riding stables, who knows. So anyway, Paul Umbrello, I'm anxious, because I really haven't talked to some of the principals that have been involved in attempts to get something going in Massachusetts, but it would be nice, right? So there you go, there's a part of the lineup. And I gotta see, I was hoping to get you a visit with Magui, because obviously, we're going to handicap nonstop tomorrow for all of the cards. Fairgrounds first and Turfway, right? But Sunland on Sunday. They've got the Oaks and the Derby and the Henson and everything else and some of the New Mexico bread steaks. Dubai World Cup, which I really honestly have not paid an ounce of attention to leading in. But Saturday morning, you know, something to keep you busy until Fairground starts. And, yeah, so we got that. There's also a couple of other venues that are going to be, I think, of interest, right? You've got, no, I've got it here as I'm looking. The, when we talked to Nick Tamaro, they've got the Texas day on Sunday. And New York's got those starter allowance / stakes, kind of a claiming crown style set and big fields. And in fact, I'll give you this real quick. The cross country pick five will feature three of those starters, all of them. They all have 11 horses, 6.5, a mile, and a mile. That's the 8th, 9th, and 10th starts the cross country tomorrow, Saturday. And then you go to Oaklawn for the Purple Martin. Only 6 for the Purple Martin, but then the 12th is a maiden special going 3/4 with 12. So the cross country pick five, Oaklawn and Aqueduct, 11, 11, 11, 6, 12 in terms of the field. And Gulfstream and Santa Anita for the coast-to-coast, if you haven't looked at this, starts at Gulfstream, 407. You got a mile turf event with 11 horses. Then a mile on the main, an optional claimer. They're both actually allowance-y-type events. Mile on the turf with 11, then a mile on the main with 11. Out to Santa Anita for a starter allowance, going a mile on the turf with 7. Back to Gulfstream for the Melody of Colors, the turf sprint stake. It's got 12 in there. And then back to Santa Anita for a cowbred maiden special with the 6 going 5.5. So sizable fields in the two multi-race, multi-venue events, which are always a lot of fun, all right? And we haven't had a chance, I haven't talked yet. Turfway, we'll slip a glance at that card in. Very nice, and you want to talk full fields, forget it. The stake sequence, you're looking at the Animal Kingdom. The Rushaway starts the all-stakes pick five. Rushaway, the Latonia. Then the Kentucky Cup Classic, which kind of came up fun and fascinating. It's actually Mike Baker rounded up all of his he rounded up all of his high-priced claims and threw them all in here. He's got 5 in the body of the race. It's hysterical. He's got, just to give you an idea, he's got Founder, who's 20-1. He's got LeBlanc, who's 15-1. Fancy Liquor, 15-1. Ocean Atlantique, 6-1. And King Cause, who obviously is a serious player, at 7-2. And he also added Richie's Got Game, who is on the outside looking in. So 14 horses, and Maker threw the kitchen sink at it. But Santin for Brendan Walsh, horse we came to really have some affection for. A band in here for Pletcher. Fun group, ready to perform for Brad Cox. How about McPeak? McPeak's all over the place this weekend, both at Turfway and Fairgrounds. Talk about McPeak in a second regarding the Jeff Ruby. The Bourbonette, the Bourbonette Oaks. Love the name of this. There's 11 in here, led by George Papa Padromo, shipping in with Ag Bullet on the outside. Umberto Rispoli comes to ride. In fact, he's also got a mount in the Ruby. But Botanical, Brad Cox vying for favoritism. Actually, they made Cox 2-1. Actually, now I'm just looking. He's also got Flashy Gem at 4-1. Bolivie for Brendan Walsh, First North America, Cassie, Renegade Rebel, and then an interesting variety of prices after that. That gets us to the Jeff Ruby, and this will be interesting because, you, as always, you've got horses making the move, turf to dirt, or turf to synthetic and dirt to synthetic. So turning to the Ruby, Pletcher, Major Dude, turf to synthetic, off the Kitten's Joy win, getting a chance to make it to Kentucky with Spendthrift. That Scooby Quando, Ben Colebrook, who we talked to and has done very little wrong, won the preview and second in an allowance and second in the Battaglia. And, of course, the horses that beat him, they're running. But Scooby Quando with Louis Machado. Irad Ortiz is riding Major Dude. So for Irad to show up at Turfway probably is notable. And it is $700,000. Event Detail, Paulo Lobo and Larry Best, Oxo, he really did not factor in the Rebel, but hard to know if that wasn't wet track related. Did break his maiden, though, at Turfway, going back to January. Fantastic again, Wesley Ward for Three Chimneys, won the Leonidas, and then waited for this. Maker's Candy for Maker, David Stoddicker in Paradise. This is a Twirling Candy Colt, the New York bred, last seen winning the Gander. Baby Billy, Jack Sisterson, and off the maiden win. Get some blinkers put on. He's a Gormley. That's for the Reeves team, Dean, Patty, and all their friends. Bluebird's Over, a horse you may not have noticed or haven't taken note of yet this year, but did win the Gray at Woodbine last year, second career start, after breaking the maiden at Gulfstream on the Tapita. Coming off the Colonel Liam, where he was overwhelmed late. So Bluebird's Over for our friends Ed Seltzer and Bev Anderson. English Channel Colt. Congruent off the Battaglia win for Antonio Sano. Tammy Bobo. She's back on the Derby trail. Is Tammy. I love it. He's got partners too, Lugamo Racing, and looks like, just the two partners. Tappet out of the Stormy Atlantic Mare, Escapologist for McPeak off the maiden win at Fairgrounds on the turf. Two fills that came up, has come up a few times. This was Ravelli's plan, and he's done very little wrong, and he won't need to, I think he could be third probably and make the Derby with the points that he got already in the Risen Star and the LeCompte. Then there's Wadsworth, winner of his last two since the start of the year, or let's say since New Year's Eve. He broke his maiden as a two-year-old on New Year's Eve at Turfway, and then came back and won an allowance. He looks like a progressive horse, really improved with the move to synthetic. This is Godolphin out of a Medaglia d'Oro mare, Dickinson, and By Quality Road. And finally, Point Proven, widest drawn, and a maiden winner that's tried a couple of allowance spots. This is a gun runner for Rapoli and Viola, a $675,000 yearling, one of those horses we've referred to already this week, one of the 60 or so two-year-olds poking around. So there's the core, those three stakes, particularly the Kentucky Cup, the Bourbonette, and the Ruby. And then, of course, the Sunland Derby. Sunland Derby is okay. It didn't get a huge field, just seven, but Hard to Figure shows up. This is the three amigos, Pegram, Watson, and Whiteman, that obviously could care less about going to the Derby. They're going to run in Baffert's name, and coming off the near miss in the Lewis. And they bought a few. I should look up how many. They were active. Donato Lanny signing for the three amigos. That Henry Q that we talked to Doug O'Neill about, because Doug leads the group, the Del Mar group, that's got some high-profile sports personalities, particularly the UCLA football and basketball coaches, as well as Mark Verge and other friends. And since I was talking about Blame, I'll remind you, he's a Blame. Henry Q, Hard to Figure, and that Fort Bragg, who I took a shine to when I was at Santa Anita, and who ran in just a kind of a meek, okay-ish race in the San Felipe, but he spins back pretty quick. So they might maybe he moved forward off of that. He had a simple half mile the other day, preparing for it. This is a good group. And then you got Asmussen showing up with one that trains at Houston. How did he do that? This is a good magic. Coming off the Riley Allison placement behind the Esteban Martinez Army Mule Colt, one in Vermilion, who won the Riley Allison. So instead of, they come right back, and there's even a what looks to be a nice horse from Redham that Antonio Garcia trains, Low Expectations, which may tell you a little something about what he looked like on the farm. It's so funny when outfits name horses that way, and they give you a hint about what has been going on behind the scenes. That is pretty funny, Low Expectations. And here he is. I mean, he broke his maiden for 50 and then really stepped forward in off that win. Sometimes the light goes on. 88 buyer, winning an allowance at Santa Anita at the beginning of the month. So that's a nice group, I think, in the Sunland Derby. And the Oaks, Baffert sends one in the Oaks, doing it the hard way. Speaking of Pegram, Watson, and Whiteman. And Todd Fincher, of course, Flying Connection. Out of the Island Fashion win. That's the Oaks. But there's Sunday. Don't forget, Sunday at Sunland. I don't know how much attention we will get for it tomorrow, where we've got Turfway and Fairgrounds to dig into. All right. With all that said and done, let's reach for I think for Dean DiRenzo. I think he said he could take us at any time. So that's now, right? Anytime. That's the way it works. And I still have got some things from last weekend we never even got to. I suppose we'll slip a couple of. It wasn't a monumental weekend of racing, but still, I still should get. Still should get some of that in, all right? Don't let me slip it in. Dean DiRenzo is going to join us, and Dean, I appreciate it, and congratulations on a nice sale.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much.
Give us some impressions, Dean, of overall your overall view of what we saw here the last 3 days.
Well, what I see is that the quality of horses are always well received. All the quality horses have gone through the sale have done very well. People know that when there's quality there, that they've got to reach for them. There's a lot of buyers for a quality horse, and that's what we stay in, is just try to stay in the top end and the quality horses, and that's what gets you the greatest stakes winners all the way through and through. Sale turned out very well. OBS did an amazing job, and having to present 800 horses through their facilities, and it was smooth as can be.
Dean, touch on. We'll hit on some of the, you know, the successes, and obviously the $1.2 million Justify on day one that Jane Lyon bred that led the, you know, that led the hits, and then you came also with the Uncle Mo that sold for $950. I mean, your work was pretty much done. You know, pretty much on day one, you did have that Tappet Philly later on. But talk about how philosophically you have approached this market, and it sure feels like there's been real significant change in you know, the last 10, 15 years in the way the 2-year-old and training sale marketplace has morphed.
It has evolved over time. You know, it used to be where you would buy a horse and hope to show some ability on the racetrack and then maybe have a profit, you know, in there just for showing the ability. But today, it's really about quality horses. They've seen so many great horses, Kentucky Derby horses, Breeders' Cup winners, so forth, come out of the 2-year-old sales. So now it's where we can go to the sales, look at the quality of the pedigree, who bred them. You talk about that $1.2 million Justify colt. Well, I actually bought her mother at a yearling sale, resold her in the 2-year-old sales. She was tremendous quality, and then we went back and saw this colt and thought, wow, she's producing quality. There and looking at her pedigree, she has already produced 2 stake horses, great stakes winner there. So knowing that she can throw that gene, and so we, you know, we kind of focus on those type of horses that can go off to the next level, you know. And then of course you handle them with kid gloves the whole time you have them, you know, just taking care of them and making them believe they're champions from the day we get them in our hands. There, and that's the hard part of it is, you know, having the right help in place to be able to take care of these horses in every way you take care of an athlete.
I'm going to touch on that because there's, and I suppose it's a much different investment strategy than, you know, than a, let's say, a commercial farm that is, you know, that is raising babies and letting them loose out, you know, out in fields. When you spend what you and Randy have spent historically, and you basically changed the pinhooking approach for a lot of people. You know, the idea was originally, you know, buy something at a bargain price and then, you know, prepare it and sell it for whatever, 8-10 times what you paid. You guys created this new approach in terms of spending, you know, significant money for yearlings, and then, you know, taking them and trying to double. I mean, $500,000 to $1 million, $400,000 to $750,000.
Right.
So you, when you say, you know, you have to watch them every day and be careful every day, that you wonder about that to some degree, Dean, because you also need these horses to be tough, and you don't want to hothouse them.
That's exactly right, and we don't hothouse them. And when we built our farm, we built it just exactly for what we need. So every morning, every one of these horses get turned out in the field, and they play, they buck. We have individual paddocks for every horse, and they play, they buck, they roll, they take care of themselves there, because, you know, rolling is very chiropractic for them there. And when they finish playing and just start grazing, then they come in the barn, get ready to go and train. Now we train for fitness and, you know, teaching and keeping their minds good. And you have to keep their minds very forward, you know, to where, like I said, they believe they're a champion when you're going. And when they finish that, they get bathed. And then after noon, after they get their lunch, then they get massaged, they get brushed, groomed. And then they know it's time for them to rest. and then they rest. They lay down and rest. And it's fun to see how they fit right into the program. Because when they go to the next level and go to the racetrack, they don't have those fields and paddocks. But, you know, hitting on that is when we buy from this quality horse, we know they've been raised very well from the time they are born to the time they go to the yearling sale. From somebody like Jane Lyons, who has an amazing facility with amazing people, those horses are raised to run out there in the field and be thoroughbreds and be horses and not hothoused. So moving up in the quality that we buy, we actually, it's easier for us because we get these horses kind of the preschool of it all. And then, like my partner Randy says, we don't do many horses. We just do our own, and it's like private school for them now. Now it's time to focus and get ready to be a racehorse. It's a fun process that we get to watch and get part of, but you have to have a passion for it to do it, because it's a lot of work.
No doubt.
It's a lot of work, you know, there. So there's a lot of places, well, not a lot, but there is one particular production company that's wanting to see what we do, and they're actually doing a show on us. It's called The Making of a Champion, and they film all day, every day, at our farm on what we do with these horses to get them to that level. We've had a crazy amount of success with 162 graded stake winners out of our small consignments. And, you know, the horses make really that. You know, it's really good to take the credit for it. But when you have good horses, they turn out to be good racehorses. You have a good product to start with. And that's how the two-year-old sales have evolved. Now there's lots of great horses in the two-year-old sales there. So it's really changed. Everybody thought we were crazy when we reach up and pay a lot of money for a horse. But to be honest, it's easier. These horses are bred to do what we're asking them to do.
You come to this sale and these sales with just a small elite handful. Do you consider do you consider spreading the risk a little bit and you know, picking out some of the smaller priced yearlings and basically kind of fill in the blanks or some underpinning? Obviously if one of these goes wrong or can't make it to the into the sales season, it doesn't take much to interrupt their training. Talk about how you deal with that risk.
Well, we deal with that risk every day when we have a barn full of horses. But, I want to say, luckily, we haven't come across that. When we get hands-on every single day, maybe we can see these little things starting to come, and we can slow the process down and rework it and maybe wait for a little later sale so that these horses grow up into the sums. If we feel like we're asking too much of the horse at the time, maybe because they're born on May the 30th or instead of April or March, we just kind of play with that daily. I haven't had any that never make the sale for any kind of injuries there. But again, we're smaller, so it's a little bit easier to be able to see them all every single day. You know, we get to keep our eyes and hands on them there, and so we can back off when needed. And, you know, some horses have all the ability in the world but don't make it because their minds are scattered. But if you can keep them really focused, they land better on the racetrack. We keep them collected at all times, which helps prevent injuries. They're having individual paddocks for each one of them helps them from getting kicked from another horse or something crazy going on there. So I think we take a little bit of the risk out of that in the process of how we do it. These horses, the better horses or the better pedigrees are raised better, are really easier to do at the end of the day. They they just go forward on their own. You know, like I said, I'd love to take the credit for it, but really the credit goes to these animals and these breeders who are breed these horses in a certain way. You know, black cats have black kittens, usually.
That's a good line. I love that.
I'm standing out here on my farm right now watching horses go. These horses will be in the next April sale. We do a lot of jogging. Again, that helps them say, okay, we're going to get ready for our training program, kind of like a warm-up. When an athlete goes into the gym, we got to warm up and let's get ready for workout. And then you kind of push them to that point of their limit at that time, that day, and no further. And then we have a long walk, which really helps us back to our, we put in a particular horse path that meanders through the farm to come back to the barn, and that gives them their letdown. Nice. You know, cool out, blood pressure down, before they even get in the barn there, and they just walk back at an easy pace and and relax and say, okay, I did what I had to do. I did my workout today. It's very similar to how you would train somebody coming out of college getting ready for the NFL. You know, the next step to it. Okay. We call it the next stage. It's what, for a better name, we're in the next stage of their development. And then they move on. And the other part that makes these horses really great is they go on, you know, the more expensive horses go on to the trainers who have owners that can do that, and they get a better horse. And they train a little differently, and they do the same thing we do. You know, guide them to that particular race and have them 110% ready for that particular race.
Touch on your own and Randy, you can speak for him too, and very often do. Talk a little bit about your background, because you came from the city, right? You're a New Yorker.
Yeah, I did. I'm a New Yorker. I'm a New York bred, and I came from the city, and Randy came from the country, and we met up 32 years ago and kind of hit it off as, horsemanship-wise, and we started our business then in 1992, so we've been partners for 32 years, so we can think just alike. So when we go to the sales, we don't hire anybody to pick out horses for us. We pick them all out ourselves. So much of it is on gut feeling. And 90% of the time, if you separated us, we'd land on the same horses. We look for a certain quality that a racehorse has. So when we started out in business, we traveled to every great race, grade one race there was in the country. And we wanted to see what all these great horses had in common. And the one thing that we found, and there's probably more than one thing, but the one thing that we found was that they all had this great shoulder and withers setback. And they came with hind ends in all different shapes and sizes, but every single one of them had this great big shoulder, short cannon bone, and it's all mechanical on how they're built to what we're asking them to do. And so we stick with that after we got that implanted in our head. It's really, we walk up to a horse, we can see it right away. We don't have to look at them very long. And then, like I said, there is a gut feeling that comes in when this horse shows you that they have a purpose, if that sounds kind of crazy. Mm-hmm. But when you walk them and they walk right off, and they look you square in the eye, like they have a purpose. There's like an alpha to them, whether it's an alpha mare or an alpha male. You have to read them, but they show it to you every time. And then there's some horses where they walk out of the barn and they have to pull them, squirt a water bottle behind them to get them to walk. They just don't have the will and the want. Hmm. And they may be great horses, but we walk by them and go to the next one. So we try to see if they can show us in their personality that they have a will. And the ones that have the will, the ones that want to do it are the ones that really make it.
Part of that is a mind. I mean, the physical goes a certain, you know, a big portion of it, obviously, but the ones that take care of themselves, that aren't hard on themselves, that seems to be a common theme when you hear successful horsemen talk about what made a horse good, a horse that lays down, a horse that understands the parameters.
Yes, 100%. I never take out of my mind this particular horse that we found in Saratoga one year, Randy and I, and I nicknamed him at the sale before I even bought him, Four-Wheel Drive, because every time he came out, every one of his legs were in four-wheel drive. He would walk on and then stand up, and he could stand up for half an hour, and he would just look like a statue because he was focused on showing off who he was and wanted to tell you, hey, I'm something. And we looked at that horse at 8 o'clock in the morning and 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and he was exactly the same horse. It didn't matter how many times he was showed that day. And, of course, you know, in Saratoga, those quality horses they have up there, he's shown a lot. So that was important to us, that he, even tired, he would give you that. So we nicknamed him Four-Wheel Drive, and we took him to the sale, and then his eventual real name was Four-Wheel Drive, and he won the Breeders' Cup. but that was started off as a nickname just because the way he did it.
Right.
There wasn't anything having to pull. I mean, he just put them down equal. You could listen to their sound on the pavement, on how they walk and that rhythm they have, like a dance. It's like a dance, and you can hear that as they're walking up and down. You can almost be blind and can pick out a horse that has a good way of going. Now, that sounds crazy, but it's something that works for us, put it that way, and Randy has the same feeling about it. And when we go to do that, of course those horses are going to cost a lot because there's a lot of other people that have that same feeling about it, and we bid against each other all the way there.
Yep.
So plenty of times we bid against the end user, meaning the person going directly to the races, so we don't concern ourselves whether we bought the horse at a wholesale price or not. We just bought a really good horse. Now we get to show ability.
And that I'm glad you put it in that term, Dean, because that really does explain the departure that you guys essentially created, which was to compete against end using yearling buyers and not being worried about paying top dollar, and that actually even begot a separate marketplace, because as those yearling prices started to careen upward, and that competition it also created these partnerships, the Rapoli Viola type things happening. Similar. And then at the same time, I can remember having conversations with Glennie Oakford when we would discuss the sales. It feels like the creation of the weanling market came as a result of this, because as the yearling prices went up, people started to look elsewhere to take their money and invest somewhere else, because they were being pushed out of that portion of the market.
Yeah, I agree, and we buy a lot of weanlings to go to your sale as well, just because of that, where I thought maybe I can buy a little more quality for a little bit less money,
right?
Maybe because I don't quite have the competition against me at the end user in the weanling market like you do the yearling market. So we buy weanlings as well. Like this year we bought 4 Gunrunners and two Uncle Moe's, 2 Tappets, 2 Authentics, and so we just put quality there to come into our program early on. that way. And, you know, the funny thing is you can see all the same stuff in a Wieland as you could a yearling. Now you have a little more time involved, and there's a little more risk there because they're turned out all the time until they grow up. You know, that maybe they get hung in a fence or something like that. So you do have a little more risk keeping them a little bit longer and not having quite the hands-on, because they have to, like you said, they've got to grow. And, you know, they're made to be grazers and run in the fields and grow. But, you know, part of our program, too, is we vet our horses very, very carefully going in to try not to have any issues to start with. There, we do heart scans, we do ultrasounds, we look at their spleen. You know, of course, we do full sets of x-rays and scopes as well. And we kind of try to at least eliminate some issues that they may have been born with before we start with them. And maybe pass up good horses because of it, but there's only so many we can do anyway.
I'll ask you the same question that I've asked all week here. What flaws are forgivable for you and Randy when you're looking, and that you can say this isn't going to be, this might be a problem for some people, but not for us.
So veterinary wise,
or confirmation wise.
Well, confirmation, I could be a little bit more lenient on there, because they're, you know, God made these horses and they're in a lot of different directions. So if they toe out a little bit, I don't have a problem with it. And usually that kind of there, so I can live with horses that are towed out a little bit. And I could even live with horses that maybe have tiny little chips in certain little joints that maybe they have had as babies. Just from running in the field, maybe on some hard frozen ground, that would eventually dissolve. That doesn't cause any catastrophic. So we could live with any of that. But probably the one thing I don't live with is ligament type damage. Because it takes a long time to heal, and we won't have that in our program to be able to have that time to give them after that. So we do ultrasound and. We do heart scans that we really do believe in, and a lot of people think it's not much to believe in, but when you have a big spleen, you have a big gas tank that holds the red blood cells, which carry the oxygen. And without oxygen, these muscles don't work. So that's an important for us to see when our girl comes back and says, this horse has an extra large spleen, and we love the horse. Now, we do these tests after we pick the horse out. None of this matters until we see the confirmation, pedigree, and what the horse may give us in will or, you know, show there. Then we start to do the rest. I wouldn't buy one because it had a big spleen and didn't fit the program, you know, like that. But I have taken myself off of ones that don't quite have the right heart, that I feel like it has the 454 engine, but it has a 2-gallon gas tank. You know, putting it in kind of layman's terms, it won't work. It'll look beautiful, but it won't get as far as we get. And, you know, we always try to buy a horse with speed. And then if it carries, John Agu told me the three most important ingredients in a horse: speed, and speed. That's what he said. All the rest will come, you know, if the horse has the will and the wheels to do it. So I kind of live by that. And that's a long time ago.
a lot of the Nehrud maxims. One of the favorites that. You know, John was on the show with us quite a bit, almost to the end, and I got a great story. Gary Siaka tells me when Gary said when he was first starting to, you know, go to the sales, and when there was one day where John said, come on, kid, walk with me. And he spent the whole day with Gary looking at horses. And Gary said one of the great moments was they went to look at one, and they take it out of the stall, and it's got a flaxen mane and a flaxen tail.
Yeah.
And Nehru said, thanks a lot, and walked away. And Gary said, don't you want to look at him? And he said, they can't run. He said, they look pretty, but they can't run.
Yeah, exactly. You know, the funny thing is that Randy and I both, when they've got the flaxen mane and tail, we just kind of say, thank you very much, you're beautiful, and we walk away.
You know? I hope I'm not...
There's been a few.
Yeah.
There has been a few, but few and far in between.
How about the little gray, some gray strands at the end of a tail?
I love it.
Yeah.
Well, I call it a coon tail.
There you go.
Like a raccoon has. And actually, I love it. And you know what a great sire he is into mischief. You could almost walk a horse out, not know anything about him, say that's an into mischief. And they'll have this blonde, grayish stripes right through his tail. Almost every one of them.
Interesting. There you go.
Yeah, it is very interesting. And you'll know that's an into mischief. And look what a sire he is. You know, one after the next. And Uncle Mo has these big forelocks on them that lots of hair down through the front of their face. And that's what he has. And it looks like he puts that in a lot of his babies. And all the really good Uncle Mo's are large, big, tall, rangy horses with big forelocks. I call them the Mohawk.
I like it.
Instead of a forelock.
Or a mohawk.
Yeah. So there are all these little tiny things that you'll notice that a lot of great horses have and some don't there. But I'm going to say the most, probably, if you had to pick out the most important ingredient of all of it, is the will. The will to want to do it.
Well, you had an all-time great in Silver Charm that you guys developed.
Oh, my gosh.
Right?
You know, smartest horse we've ever had in our life. So he's number one on all my signs, of course, Silver Charm. And not because he was our first Derby horse, but when they interviewed us after we sold him, one girl said to me, "I it's hard for me to understand that everybody has said they rode Silver Charm. Could you have had that many different riders?" And I laughed because the funny thing about it was that he was so gentle and smart that if we had a new rider come in for an interview, we'd put him on him because we know he wouldn't hurt him.
Amazing.
So he had a lot of different riders. We'd say, get the gray colt, because he'd go out there and train like he knew how to do it, like he was already pre-trained. And he'd switch his leads and just do everything really smart horse. So we put those riders on so we can pay attention to the rider. And so, yeah, he probably had 10 different riders on him.
Pretty funny.
Yeah, so, you know, they just do it. And he always had the will. He always had the will. He just, and, you know, if you ask Bob today, what is, you know, he had the greatest horses in all the world, what's one of his favorite horses? And he will say Silver Charm.
Well, as it happens, Michael Blowen is going to be on next, and you know, Michael Blowen, the Silver Charm's his best friend.
I mean, smartest horse. My daughter was 8 years old, and he would take her ponytail and hold it. She said, "Daddy, look." I said, wait a minute, don't. And she said, "No, it's all right." And she pet him, and he dropped it. She said, "He always does that." And so after he won the Kentucky Derby, I talked to Bob Lewis, and he said, "If you won't tell anybody, I think we're going to win the Preakness too." And I said, I looked at the date. It was May 17th. And I never forget it because it was my daughter's 8th birthday, May 17th.
Yeah.
And so he won, and I called her, and I said, she called him Casper because he was gray, you know, as a kid.
Oh,
I said, "Casper won again." And she said, "Daddy, I told you not to sell him," is what she said. But on her 8th birthday, he won the Preakness also. He was that smart of a horse from day one. Isn't that something?
I'm going to bring up another beat to also for a couple of reasons. First to show that you guys have had success with any kind of runner, but also because, of course, news of her passing came to light in the last, 2 weeks. You guys started Extra Heat.
Yes. Yeah, we did. We sure did. And, her vetting was terrible. And to be honest, I had a lot of friends walk up to me and say to me, "Oh, well, thanks a lot for taking me off that horse. You didn't sell me that horse." Well, she had little things in her bedding that looked like you wouldn't want somebody that you know to just jump in there and buy her, and we sold her. Anyway, she's never had surgery. An absolute amazing horse all the way through. She was, again, one of those sleepers that you don't know they're in the barn, because you groom never has to say, "Hey, come take a look at this," or "take a look at that." One of those horses that are just there and doing their job all the time. And most of our best horses have been like that. The Justified Colt, Randy called him a sleeper because he never knew he was in the barn. He'd just stand there and rest when he had to, eat all the time, never went out of his feed. Love that part of it. I guess they're destined to be. Of course, there's so many other things that may hurt. Todd Fletcher had Kozan, and he had two of the greatest races that his numbers were amazing. I think he had 104 by in his maiden start and 106 in his next start. And then he kicked the post and broke his back leg, of all things, And now he's a great sire. Uh-huh. He's a great sire. But he was the favorite for the Florida Derby. And Todd said, "Wow, what a horse. Everything, right." But he felt good one day and kicked out and hit a steel beam and boom, it was over for him. So there's other variables that have nothing to do with training that sometimes may stop their career, which is unfortunate, but that's just like a ball player.
Yeah.
We know many of those, right?
No doubt.
You get into a car accident or something, Bobby Hurley.
Yeah.
He's in a car accident and kind of ended his career.
No, there's no doubt. It doesn't take much either.
No, it doesn't. And you see the risk, but I'm not sure that I have any more risk than any other horse with an expensive horse. Other than the money portion of it that you may lose, but I think they mind themselves better, so it reduces it. They're very focused. I love how Randy calls it private school, instead of public school. They're in private school and they get to graduate with high honors and move on to the next. Like that. It's been a good fun time, but you have to love it. You gotta have a passion for it.
Yeah.
I'm 63 years old and I stand out here every morning and love every bit of it. Can't wait to get my coffee and go to work.
That's something. It's funny. John Secura yesterday said the exact same thing. Sid Fernando asked him about his kids and if his boys were interested in the game, and moving into the industry behind John. And John said it's not something. It's not something that you take on as a job or just as a career. You have to be completely in love with it because there's too many heartaches, Dean.
You're right. You have to have that will. The will to ride the wave as well. Some people just don't, born with. My daughter didn't take on. She's an attorney, and that fits her perfectly. She's so scheduled, that. I wish because I would love to see Holly Dorenzo keep going after both Randy and I are gone, but we neither one of us have children that wanna do that.
Hmm.
So we'll do it until we're 85 years old, I guess.
that wouldn't surprise me or anybody. Dean DiRenzo's been with us. Got to ask too about your own breeding operation, and because you were developing your own horses, and where's that stand?
Well, you know, we had stopped that some years ago when Florida didn't quite have the mare pool. But when it did, we started it, and we were breeding 27% of the whole state. Our stallions were breeding. And so we had leading sire after leading sire breeding the right way. Again, another Nehrud quote that I never forgot. It was, you breed like kind to like kind. If you want a good horse, you take the best of their ability and breed it to the mare's best of her ability of the same kind, and you'll have the best again. And I always follow that. So if we had a speed horse in, we would breed speed mares, and we would have, you know, good foals that way. So we always followed that, breeding like kind to like kind, physical to physical. And that was very good for us. We were, you know, topping the breeding in Florida for quite a while. And then when the mares seemed to kind of go away and more of them go to Kentucky, we kind of stepped out of it feeling like we couldn't really develop a stallion with just a few mares. It needed to have, you know, a full book of mares to get the right. So we kind of, and then we, you know, as age goes on, you want to slow down a little bit and get a little time with your family, where I can spend the summers with my wife and enjoy a little bit of time when we're not quite that busy. That kept us 100-hour weeks. You know?
Well, I was going to say that means by the time, all right, so you basically have from the end of the June sale until...
Yeah, that's it. And now, you know, when we keep moving our quality up, and every year our program, Randy and I's program, is to, even if we think we had the best quality, we're going to try and improve on that again. And then have more better quality the following year, and better quality after that. There. So with that said, we wind up with no June horses, and gives it a little bit of a break. There we finish up in April, or May, actually. We go to the May. We really like the Maryland sale up there in Timonium. We've done it now 30 years in a row. So we will probably never leave that sale out of our program. And we sold really great horses up there. We sold the first $1 million horse ever brought there. It was $1.5 million, and his name is Curlin's Honor, multiple graded stakes winner. Fantastic. He's a sire now in Florida.
Yep.
And has beautiful babies. I had the opportunity to go out and look at a bunch of them the other day, and would like to have some of those in my program, because he was a really quality horse. And everybody said, you'll never get that kind of quality horse. You'll never get that kind of money in Maryland. Well, you bought $1.5 million. You know what? It didn't make a difference where you put them, I guess. They shine.
He's at Pleasant Acres.
Yes, he's at Pleasant Acres. He is, and he's beautiful. Maybe the most beautiful curling you ever want to see. He's out of a Storm and Fever mare, which brought in some nice speed in his family, and he had a lot of speed there. He worked on that little bull ring, and he was a big horse in 10 flat and just kept going. And they do that in a hand ride. You know, there's no whipping and driving anymore. There's, you know, the whole thing of the two-year-old sales has become developing horses the way they should be, not just going down there for a time. If they can do it really fast, of course, that's the better, you know, what we get to look at this time, you know, for them. And so it's evolved tremendously from when we started 32 years ago, that's for sure. We got lucky to have some really nice horses in our first crop, but we bought those strictly on gut feelings. You know, Silvertron was not a very correct horse. He towed out and looked like Charlie Chaplin. But he had a presence to him from the side that was amazing. And so we bought two that sale, and both of them were champions. Well, the other one was Stormy Blues. And she was a Florida bred, so she was Florida champion, and Silverton was 3-year-old champion there. So we actually had two champions back then, right away. But just then we were just buying racehorse-looking horses. She was a little back at the knee, but moved beautifully. So we kind of gave that up a little bit, kind of answer your earlier question.
Yeah. There you go.
Some of the things that we would give up, but physically, they had that it, whatever that it may be.
The it factor.
Yeah, the it factor. That's very hard to teach, but you get to see it if you have your eye for it, you know. And you don't know you have an eye for it until you do it.
Dean, before we wrap up, I do want to, when you talk about an eye, and of course when we're talking about the kinds of horses that you bring to market, you know, Uncle Mo, Justify, Tappet, Into Mischief, Harrogate, Bunnings, which of the new sires, who have you been impressed with that you think is going to hit?
Well, I tell you, I'm tremendously impressed with Audible. And he's a 2-year-old of 2023.
Yep.
And they have the look and the mindset. So we didn't really have that many new sires this year. Audible is probably my only one that I have of a new sire. But then when I bought Babies, oh my God, I was tremendously impressed with Authentic. They happen to be by the same sire.
Yep.
Both of those. But Authentic Babies have bone, size, withers, shoulders. They have almost everything I looked at. I bought two of them as weanlings, and they were, you know, somewhat pricey for weanlings, $280,000, $260,000 a piece. You know, last 2 years ago, I thought Gunrunner was. And I bought Tabor, never looked at him at the barn. Missed them for whatever reason. I think it was right after COVID. We weren't sure how many we would buy because of COVID has made the world upside down. We're standing at the ring and the horse walks in and he walks around the ring. And I said to Randy, what is that? I didn't have a book. He said, it's a Gunrunner. Well, we loved Gunrunner right from the start. And so I went to the consigner and asked them, I didn't pre-vet this horse. I didn't do my due diligence. Would you stand behind him? He shook my hand and he said, if there's anything you don't like about the horse, you won't own him. And I bought him for $130,000. And right there. Then I went ahead and did all my work and he checked all the boxes. And of course, you know, he went down there the right way and he made the horse that he is today. There. And so Gunrunner was one of my picks and I hit on that one at least. I think coming to see the future, I'm loving these Authentics. Whew. It was pretty special.
Well, and you mentioned both being by Into Mischief, him and Audible, and it. I think I'm pretty sure I brought it up with Sid last year, where we were talking about the Into Mischiefs that were in the pool that were sending the yearling, you know, to the yearling market, and it,
right.
it just feels like he's this generation's Stormcat. With less flaw, with less issues.
Yeah, I would agree with that 100%. He is, you know, he's a little older now, but the produce just keeps coming at every level. And, you know, there was a lot of talk about that he wouldn't have a horse to be able to go a mile and a quarter. And then here comes Authentic, you know. And that stopped all that, you know. I think he's and Gunrunner is probably in my 32 years of career of this maybe the best sire we've ever seen so far come in to have multiple horses, not just Tabor, multiple horces one after the next, Cyberknife and oh my gosh, the most beautiful horse I think I've ever seen is Early Voting when he won the Preakness. And that's first crop of horses. Now, can you imagine what he's getting bred to? What kind of mares that are going to be with him, and what his future will look like? There's going to be, you know, outstanding.
No.
Outstanding. So we piled up on them. Like I said, I bought four of them. And, you know, the cheapest baby I bought was $400,000. I bought one for $700,000 as a weanling just to get them. You know,
yep.
And Randy goes, man, we got a lot of gun runners, so we can never have too much of a good thing.
Right, that's what, in this game, certainly, yes, it's not gonna hold you back, and obviously, nothing has. How many are we gonna see in the April sale?
We're gonna see, I think we have 8 in the April sale: Medaglia's, City of Lights, Munnings, Uncle Moe's, I have Practical Joke, another son of Into Mischief. That's doing fantastic. So, yeah, you hit it. He's probably like the Stormcat, or even the Mr. Prospect, whose sons are doing it. He's a sire of sires.
Yeah.
We have quality again coming back to the April sale, and then I'll again have quality in the May sale, and hopefully I'll be finished with the 2-year-olds right then. Not this times we have with fantastic mayors. You know, I really believe the mayor has so much to do with it, maybe even more than the sire in a lot of cases.
Yep.
So we look for mayors that either really good runners. I love these mayors that have had, you know, like those gun runner, the Taba, was out of a mayor that probably had 17 starts. You know, she made $600,000 or $700,000, but I mean, talk about soundness. It showed soundness to me how many starts she had. She ran only in Ohio, but that didn't matter. She was the very best there.
Well, that was Billy Connolly with Need More Flattery.
Yes, Need More Flattery, her name was, and she was sound as can be to run that many times and win that many times. You know, that's a hard thing to do. So I thought, well, you know, with Gunrunner, he was another very sound horse. My gosh, that's probably one of the only sires I've seen in my lifetime that got better with age. He didn't run out of gas. He just kept filling his tank, you know. 2-year-old, 3-year-old, 4-year-old, he was even better at the end. His last race was incredible.
Yep.
I'm sure they could have continued to race him, but at that time, you know, he said, well, why risk anything hurting him?
Well,
and
he's, you know, he's one of those examples that, you know, the Triple Crown, we've had a bunch of this lately. You don't have to be a horse that makes the Triple Crown to make an impact and have a career and then, you know, go on successfully to the shed and have an influence.
Well, most of them are, you know, a neighbor's another neighbor thing, and I love that I was able to spend a little bit of time with him. Was he felt like the greatest sires were milers when they were really great at a mile. They
yep.
had the speed and can carry it.
Exactly.
And so I kind of, you know, I never forget what that man has told me or taught me. Never.
No, and those are maxims that are never gonna go away.
No, and you know, I feel blessed to have been able to have somebody like that as my mentor and be able to really hands-on give me some ideas of what it really takes to become a champion. Well, he's had them.
Well, and you and Randy keep producing them as well. Dean, well done. I this is an overdue pleasure. And
anytime.
I appreciate it.
You're welcome very much. Enjoy the rest of the day.
Thank you, Dean. Dean DiRenzo, everybody, and Hartley DiRenzo, that have really, in a lot of ways, changed the whole pin-hooking game. We ripped right through 90 minutes. That's happened every day this week. I look up at it, it's an hour and a half in. But that was too good, too informative, and you know, got a little bit of history in with some of the great horses that Dean DiRenzo and Randy Hartley have put their stamp on. And you got a little breeding insights in there. Little hints about knowing if a stallion's put his stamp on babies, right? Did you pick that up? That was good. We've got now. Of course, I put myself in in a jackpot. The second half of the show, we'll have like six guests. Yeah, right. Bill Gallo, Michael Blowen, Jeff Franklin for the Thoroughgraph at the Races segment. Paul Umbrello from the Massachusetts breeding community, and Rich Ang. And probably get a last send off from Tommy Ventura too, before we send you out into the race day. It is Thursday, speaking of the race day, and of course, reminder, no, they've already canceled tomorrow at Santa Anita, but Fairgrounds, Gulfstream, Oaklawn today, Turfway tonight, Charlestown tonight, Hawthorne with their slightly unusual schedule. Louisiana Downs. Got to get Louisiana Downs mention in. Mahoning, Penn National, Remington. Remington, of course, for the quarters. There's your Thursday calendar as the race week picks up some momentum. And, of course, there's some... We'll talk tomorrow, obviously, about Fairgrounds closing weekend, and there's some exciting races to be decided. The trainer title, Brett Calhoun and Ron Fauché. I think they're all at 35, 36 wins. I saw a graphic yesterday. So that'll come to a head. The fairgrounds card right here, it's about 3/4 of an inch thick. It's paper. I went through it last night. It's going to be fun. Let's take a timeout. Come back for the second half, 90 minutes ahead. Bill Gallo, as we kick off the jump season Saturday. And Michael Blowen, Jeff Franklin, Paul Umbrello, Rich A. At the races. We're at OBS, so at the sales. I should change it the way International House of Pancakes does. Back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in North America. But we're also proud to be leaders in this industry. The PA Horse Breeders Association is funding cutting-edge research at Penn Vet into equine health and safety. And we endorse the SAFE Act to help protect the most vulnerable horses. Plus, we're pleased to support the aftercare programs set up by our horsemen's groups. Just a few of the reasons why you should join us in Pennsylvania, the premier place to breed and race.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action and thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match.